Welcome to Women Leading the Way radio show, where each time you'll hear from successful women CEOs, executives, and professionals, where we'll discover how they do what they do to be successful in business. We'll be interviewing women who have overcome big challenges, women who have incredible stories of lessons learned in dealing with adversity. We'll even interview women who have started and grown successful organizations, and women who are C-level executives with unique talents and positions. Our goal is to bring successful businesswomen together to share how they're leading the way in business today.
Good morning and welcome to Woman Lead Radio, brought to you by Connected Women of Influence. I'm Melissa Washington, your host of Women Veterans in Business. Our show topic today is Love Your Life, Live in Health. And our leading lady today is Deanna Wan. Deanna, welcome.
Melissa, thank you so much for having me on your show today.
Absolutely. And thank you for your service.
Oh, thank you for yours as well.
Thank you. So, since we're focused on women veterans in business, we always want to begin the talks with as far as our military journey and why you joined the military and your time in the military. So we're going to go back a little bit to what made you decide to join the military and then also to go to the academy?
Yes, well, I wanted to find something that was maybe a little bit off the beaten path. I was exposed to the U.S. Air Force Academy while in high school. I went to their summer scientific seminar for a week and was just really drawn to that place. It was just a beautiful setting in the Rocky Mountains, and I wanted to develop, just the discipline that I saw amongst the cadets there. And so, before I knew it, I just got a hold of the catalogs and, was reading them and decided to apply and got in. But it wasn't, it wasn't a smooth path, when I, you have to test and do a physical fitness test to get in. And back then I passed everything except for one test. I actually failed the pull-up test, and back during that time, it was, in the 1980s, a woman just had to do one pull-up, and I couldn't do any, even though I had trained with a police sheriff for a better part of a year prior to that, and my brother, who was in the Marines at the time, I was training with him too, but couldn't do it on the day of the test. And so with that failure, I basically I just prayed and I just said, God, if you want me to go there, you'll make a way. Otherwise, it wasn't meant to be. And I had to retest in a week. And so I went back, and amazingly, I did 3 pull-ups from 0 to 3. And so that was my sign. That's where I was supposed to go.
Absolutely. So you go to the academy. And for those that may not be familiar with the Air Force Academy, can you just tell a little bit about how long that is and what happens in the academy?
Sure. Yes, it's like a 4-year college university, and it's one of the military academies, like West Point. It's like the West Point of the Air Force, and of course there's a Naval Academy as well and Coast Guard Academy. It's just like a university, but it's a little bit more regimented, and you go through basic training, but after the 4 years, you come out with your bachelor's degree and a commission, a full commission as a second lieutenant in the Air Force.
And so during that time, what did you want to do? What was your aspiration? What is that? I want to do this in the Air Force.
I initially was just trying to figure it out. I thought, well, maybe I'll go into civil engineering, and then I changed. I thought maybe astronautical engineering, and eventually I settled on physics, and I decided on physics because I felt like it was, a basic science that would actually allow me to understand the world around me.
Mm-hmm. And I just wanted to just go back to just to make a note so that our listeners understand too, as far as, you joined in the 80s, and that was the first decade of women being admitted you know, into military service academies. So you're one of the trailblazers of women going to the academies, and thank you for that.
Yeah. Thanks for bringing that up. Yeah.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I think it's important for people to know. I mean, it's long ago, but that not that long ago, you know, for women to be able to have the opportunity to go to the academy there. So you go to the academy. What's your duty station after out of the academy?
So my first duty station was in Dayton, Ohio at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. So I was working currently now the sensors director of the Air Force Research Laboratory. But back then, of course, it had a different name. And it was really an awesome assignment because, you know, I was fresh out of, you know, the academy with my physics degree and managed to secure a job working in a lab. And I was basically shown an empty lab space and, you know, told to go build a laser radar design system in, you know, laboratory. And so was able to actually build Wright Laboratory's first coherent laser radar system.
Very, very, very impressive. So let's fast forward a little bit to when you were diagnosed with ovarian cancer. So if you can just, how long were you already in the military? Where were you at? I mean, what was your life like? And how did you find out? And I mean, we know it changed the whole trajectory of your life and what you do, but can you just tell us a little bit about that time?
Sure, yeah. So I was about 23 years already in the Air Force and had, you know, I was working at the time as the Joint Program Manager for Biological Defense. And I remember I started feeling, you know, a lot of pressure and pain in my pelvis area and, you know, landed shortly in the hospital. And, you know, I was told that I had ovarian cancer, that they had pretty much ruled out everything else, and I had excruciating pain. You know, they put me on a morphine IV, and, you know, it was really shocking because it didn't even touch the level of pain that I had. That's how bad it was. You know, I basically saw just a vicious cycle with the medications that they had me on. You know, I would develop side effects, and then they would give me medications to treat those, and it kept going. And at a certain point, I kind of, you know, defaulted back to maybe because my grandfather, my mother's father, was a traditional, you know, Chinese medicine herbalist. And I realized that growing up, being treated with these herbs for whatever ailments you might have, you know, there were no side effects from it. And so I, you know, that early on, I kind of made a decision to change my diet and to just, you know, clean things up. And amazingly, when I made certain changes, I noticed within 3 months, my elevated tumor markers actually dropped back to, you know, to normal. And so I thought, well, great, you know, everything's under control. And I went back to you know, essentially working my 16 to 18 hour days in the military, and eventually I landed myself in hospice, and at that point it really looked like the point of no return. I, you know, basically was told I had 4 weeks left to live. I had both of my lungs collapsed, filled with fluid, and I was on oxygen, so it was a pretty traumatic period to go through. But, you know, I managed really by God's grace to recover from that. And when I did that, I knew that my healing wasn't just for me. It was really to be able to help other people and to provide hope that even when it looks like, you know, things are kind of grim, you know, there's always still hope.
Absolutely. So you had still stayed in the military after all of this happened?
I did. I was still in the military at the time, and at a certain point, you know, I just realized that I probably would have to retire. You know, if it wasn't for this diagnosis that I had received with the ovarian cancer, I probably would have stayed in, you know, much longer. But given that diagnosis and, you know, after I landed in hospice, then I decided, you know, to actually apply for retirement because, you know, I was in a leadership position and, you know, just kind of was thinking about the organization too and wanting the best for the organization as a whole. And I'm just very grateful. I just feel like my bosses, you know, it was a joint assignment, and my boss at the time was an Army general who really took very good care of me. And so that's what allowed me to eventually transition out of the military and into what I'm currently doing now.
That's great. And I want to get back to that. We're just going to take a quick moment to recognize one of our sponsors and partners. Women Lead Radio is brought to you today by Connected Women of Influence, and our partner, Women Lead Radio, is brought to you today by our partner, National University. National University is proud to be one of the largest private nonprofit universities, founded in 1971. The National University mission is to provide accessible, achievable higher education to adult learners. Today, the National University educates students from across the U.S. and around the globe, with over 170,000 alumni worldwide. And truly, thank you so much for your support, National University, and to all of our sponsors and partners. All right, so we're back to Women Veterans and Business, and with us today is Deanna, and she was just sharing with us her military experience, her time of being diagnosed with ovarian cancer, being told that she only had 4 weeks to live, and now we're into her transition out, because all of these things that happened to you brings you to where, I mean, you are today, right, of everything. And so let's go back, your transition out of the military, and what are you thinking? What's next for you? You said, okay, I'm going to go in to work in corporate America. I'm going to work in the health field. What was the plan?
At that time, my plan was actually to go work at the Department of State because, you know, I had worked in international research and development in the military, and so I felt it would lend itself really well to, you know, just a foreign affairs type of a job.
Then what was going on? So what happened? When was it, or what was that feeling of, okay, what I've gone through I know can help other people, and I'm sure you probably felt that during the time, but how did you decide to, transition into your own business of helping others, practitioner, and I mean, there's all these things that you're doing and certified, and to me it's so fascinating, and I definitely want to learn more and understand more. But what brought you to that? When was that time you said, okay, I'm gonna do this? And
it was really organic, Melissa, because when I first received my diagnosis of ovarian cancer, that's when I actually initially enrolled in the Institute for Integrative Nutrition, because I wanted to explore all the different dietary theories, to see which diet would be best suited for my own healing. And interestingly enough, of course, when I ended up in hospice, I had to call the school, and they were incredibly supportive, and they said, well, you know, when you recover, and I wasn't sure I was going to recover, but they said, when you recover, you can pick it up, but you would have to start all over again. And so that's kind of what I went through. I actually, once I recovered, I started it all over again and realized that, while I had initially started to learn this for myself, that it could help many people, because I thought, surely, if I'm able to come out of hospice, that in itself, if one person can recover, that there's no reason why other people can't do the same thing, you know, no matter what the situation. And I just felt such a strong conviction about that, that I continue to work on different certifications to include functional diagnostic nutrition, you know, which allows me to, you know, order labs for my clients, you know, functional labs that sometimes the more conventional doctors may not, you know, order. But that's how I started. And then, of course, you know, healing is a continuous journey. You know, it's not a one-and-done thing. And so I've just continued to, you know, whatever I feel passionate towards, you know. For example, at one point in time, I was having really issues with my vitals becoming unstable, high heart rate, high blood pressure, and it would just be episodic, you know, nothing consistent. And I ended up, you know, after being in a hospital many times, nobody could really help me, and I ended up in a chiropractor's office, and he realized that my nervous system was so on edge that he could not even physically touch me to work on me. And so he kind of just waved his hands in the air around my body, and I had no idea what he was doing. But my heart rate, which was well over 100, you know, it was like 150, it dropped back down to 70s beats per minute from what he did. So I said, well, what is this? And he says, oh, it's something called biogeometry. And so I told myself, well, when I get well from this, I'm going to go study that. And so that's exactly what I did. And that's kind of what led me down this path, you know, to what I'm doing now is just, from my own personal experience and just what called out to my heart, you know, as far as I need to learn more about this.
And you're definitely a learner because I looking at your bio and everything that you do, you're a certified emotion code practitioner. And I definitely want to talk a little bit more about that. A certified NES health practitioner. You earned a certification NES health biogenetics, wellness, and the emotion code, certification in permaculture design. Amazing that you're learning more for you, but then also to be able to help others and getting all these certifications and learning. And I know even though right now we're talking and you're at a conference and you took the time to get on this show, and I greatly appreciate that, but just that you're continuing to learn. So what is a certified emotion code practitioner?
It's basically a practitioner who's trained in this form of energy healing that was developed by Dr. Bradley Nelson. And it's a modality that actually allows you to identify, like if you're having some sort of health symptom or sickness or illness, what is the underlying emotion that is contributing to that? Because nothing is ever in isolation, and I learned that from my own journey. You know, initially, when I had, you know, the cancer, I was focused very heavily on diet and nutrition, and I could see the benefits of that. You know, it was clear that diet affected my tumor markers. However, I got to a point where I felt like my progress had plateaued, and I knew I would have to go deeper. And so that deeper part was in the emotional area, because, you know, if you've ever experienced any sort of emotional conflict or trauma in the past, if those traumas are not really resolved, then they actually can exert an energetic influence that are still carried within your cells, the body. And with all energy, we know from physics that energy can neither be created nor destroyed. So if it's there and it's not, you know, processed or dealt with, that is what can eventually, after years of having the same sort of a detrimental energy, and you may not be aware of it on a conscious level, but it's there within our subconscious, which is like if you think about an iceberg, you know, the tip of the iceberg is really our conscious mind, but what lurks beneath the water is huge, and that is our subconscious mind, and the subconscious remembers everything that we've been through. And so this modality allows you, using emotion code, to not only identify what these emotions are, but to clear it from your system so that it no longer has to impact you.
And is that something you're able to do with people over the phone? They come in person? How does that process work?
They can come in person, but I can work with them remotely, and so that's the real power of this. I've worked with people even like in China, and it doesn't matter because this is it's based on quantum physics. And so, you know, there's what's known as the field, which is like the matrix that, you know, we're actually all connected into. And so it's been really an amazing process to learn about this because it is so very powerful because distance is not a factor.
All right, so I'm intrigued, and I'm sure there are many people that are listening right now want to find out how can they reach out to you after the show. So what's the best way for people to contact you?
Yes, they can find me on my website, which is my name. Basically, it's deannawon.com. That's spelled deannawon.com.
Perfect. And we'll have a link to your website on the show page as well. And we met a few years ago when we were in Texas, gathered for different women that are speakers, because you're also a speaker as well. And one of the things that I remember about you, which, again, using the word intrigued again, was that, you know, you talk it and you live it, and that came to when you're healthy, you're eating, right? So you know that when you go to different places, there might not be the right foods. And I was impressed by however you searched around the hotel that we were at for different places that would have food, you know, that you were interested in. I'm sure you brought food, but is that something you still continue to do?
Yes, absolutely. In fact, I'm doing it here at this conference. I've brought in my own water, food, and it's really important. And it's not hard, you know. It just, you know, people can just Yelp, you know, places, you know, so that even when you're traveling, you don't have to just be subject to whatever's there. I just think it takes a little bit of pre-planning, and, you know, you just have to take care of, you know, your physical body, and it will make a difference in whatever you're doing.
Great. Now, so the speaking, what are your speaking topics?
I can speak on a broad, I guess, variety of topics, anything from, you know, authenticity and leadership to, you know, how to live healthy, you know, holistic healing, whether it's from cancer or, you know, just maybe weight loss or, you know, blood pressure. But it goes beyond that, you know, like I can also speak about, you know, the electromagnetic environment. How is that impacting your health, you know, like from your cell phone devices, Wi-Fi, that sort of thing. It's the sky's the limit. In permaculture now, of course, that's growing things organically, which is in a way that is sustainable for nature. And it's a sharp kind of a pivot from, you know, what we've all experienced through industrial agriculture. And so, you know, anything that has to do with health and life, that's sort of my focus.
So you're very busy. So what do you like to do in your spare time, if you have any?
In my spare time, you know, I'm really into photography, and I love wildlife. I love the birds. And so I love to just get out and just take pictures of just the amazing variety of birds around us. No matter where you live, they're there. And I also am a musician. I played a piano I like to, you know, just listen to music as well, and movement, dance. I love dance as well. So those are just some of my hobbies.
Awesome. Now, with that, with all the great work that you're doing and all the health benefits with this, what do you think is, why is this not becoming more mainstream? I mean, it's very slow, but what is it going to take to have it progress quicker and to more mainstream?
I think it's when people realize, like, if they're facing a health crisis, or it could be even just a life crisis, that's kind of a doorway to, you know, where when you have a crisis, it's really an opportunity to see, well, what's working in your life and what's not, and to basically go through a process where you're like, okay, we need to change, we need to pivot, and that's what really opens the door. That's when I did my deep dive into researching, is when I, you know, received the cancer diagnosis. And it could be different for different people. It may not take something that's life-threatening, but, if a person gets to a point where they're just feeling enough dissatisfaction with the current state of their life, that's actually an opportunity. And so I think that it's important for people to really become aware of that and not to just minimize it. I think that's how people just kind of continue with the status quo in their life, and things don't get better. But it's when you have a moment to just take a step back and see, okay, wait a minute, you know, rather than run on automatic pilot, what can I do differently? And then that's when people learn, and it may not be for themselves. It might be their children. Maybe they have a child that has autism, for example, and so then that causes the parent to dig deeper to see, well, what can really help my child?
So what's next for you?
Well, I'm really wanting to look at ways to, just optimize some of my systems. There's a book that I'm also working on that I really would like to publish soon, and I'm looking to also develop an online course for holistic healing from cancer for those who, you know, don't have the opportunity to work with me one-on-one. I want the information to be out there for anyone to access.
Oh, fantastic. So believe it or not, we're coming up to the end of our show. And I want to find out, is there anything you'd like to leave with our listeners?
Yeah, the one thing I want to leave behind for your listeners, Melissa, is that, no matter what is happening in your life, take the time to really check in with yourself. You know, if there's something that you just feel like is not quite working the way you want, you know, you don't have to continue down that path. There's always hope, you know, that's number one. There's always hope that your situation can improve and can turn around. And so don't ever give up hope. And then once you have that hope, then that will kind of open things up for your mind to be able to explore. And then the last thing is to be sure that it's not just, you know, if you make a decision, that you're not making it just out of your cognitive, you know, intellectual process, but that you check in with your heart. And if it's something where you really feel at peace, then proceed, or if it brings you a lot of joy. And so I just think it's important, hope, joy, love, peace, all of these things are really critically important. You can't leave them out.
No, that's great, great words. And, well, that's our show for today. And I'd like to say thank you to Deanna One for being our leading lady today, and a special thanks to all our listeners both in the U.S. and internationally, as we are an international show. After our show today, you can listen to Women Lead Radio and all subscription podcasts, specifically Apple Podcasts, iTunes, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and iHeartRadio. We're expanding quickly to a daily radio show and podcast, so for now, we'll be back again for another live Women Lead radio show on Mondays at 9 a.m. Pacific time and Fridays at 2 p.m. Pacific. It's been my sincere pleasure to be your host today. Thank you for listening and have a great week.
Women Leading the Way is produced by Connected Women of Influence, the premier private membership organization where like-focused business-to-business executive and professional women connect, collaborate, and cultivate a vast network of high-level affiliations, resources, and professional relationships. For more information about Connected Women of Influence, please visit our website at connectedwomenofinfluence.com.